Welcome into the Godly Young Men Podcast, episode 160.
Wow.
Insane. Hitting 160. Every single time, I feel like I'm always, every time I intro, it's like, man, 157.
Well, it feels like a month ago that we did the Ask Me Anything, episode 150.
Yeah, no joke.
That's 10 episodes ago. So what is that, almost 3 months?
Yeah. We're cruising. And episode 200, we're going to have like an all-day event or something. Got to top it of what we did. But yes, we're in 160. We had said two episodes ago, on part one of the disciplining that is like the next episode is going to be talking about controlling emotions. We had a part two in there. We weren't expecting that. And so we've come around to the idea of controlling emotions. It's something that we've been asked before. We've been asked about what do you do with anger. We're specifically going to spend a little more time on anger. We'll get into some sadness and anxiety, coping techniques, things like that to process through those. But I would say this is one of the greatest downfalls of men. Is not controlling the emotions. You hear phrases like, he fell into a fit of rage, right? Maybe he lost heart, which would be losing courage. The fear kind of took over. Or, man, he gave up on life. And there the depression comes in, the sadness comes in. The man just gave up on life, or he gave up on his family, or whatever it may be. And so the controlling of emotions is a key piece of being a godly young man, just being a man in general, but being a godly young man. And we know that emotions are normal. They're created by God. This is not a bad thing. We're not looking to be emotionless, the Stoic philosophy. And you get a lot of young guys that kind of get into Stoicism these days, and they eschew any emotionality, really. And we don't think that's smart. That's not wise.
Yeah. I mean, you think about the men in the Bible that you read about, there's a lot of emotion in the Bible. First thing that comes to mind immediately is Moses coming down, seeing the golden calf, and just absolutely, you know, just chucking down the tablets and then breaking. Obviously, I think of Jesus overturning the tables in the temple. I think of, you know, there's a lot of times you see Elijah go into the brook Kerith in the book of, it's either 1st or 2nd Kings. Sorry, I should have looked it up.
One of those, sir.
He's borderline depressed, right? I mean, he is just like, I'm the only one left, essentially. And, you know, so he was certainly dealing with some emotion there. I mean, we could go on and on. There's fear from a lot of the men in the Bible. Barak comes to mind. Like, again, we could just keep going down the list. A lot of emotion. God created emotion. I think that's very, very important to point out that God is the one that created it. It's not something that, you know, is man-made. No, he created this in us. And so now it is up to us as godly young men, just like with anything in life, to figure out, okay, how do I master it? How do I best use it? How do I appropriately allow it to come out, essentially? Because I would agree with Joe, suppressing your emotions, bad idea. It almost never works out. Obviously, Joe's going to be the expert to talk about that. But yeah, I say that to say, again, look at the Bible, men in the Bible, God creating it. Emotion in and of itself is not evil.
Right, right. And just as a brief statement, I guess, on that idea of suppression, when we talk about controlling emotions, that's the goal here in this episode. We've done other episodes on emotion. Episode 123, I think, was on sadness on crying. You know, should grown men cry?
And then we did one in response to the Austin Metcalf stabbing about violence and aggression, essentially.
That's right.
Like, when you get angry, you know, it was more of a violence and aggression episode, but it certainly played into that.
Right, right. And then I think we've talked about anxiety before as I was prepping the outline, just looking through, like, man, this sounds familiar. I don't remember what episode, maybe multiple episodes, so some of this may be redundant, but really the point we're trying to get to is controlling. And when we say control, again, we do not mean suppression. A lot of guys, I think, when they say, well, I'm controlling my emotion, it means all of it's pressed down. They don't have any emotion. They're not feeling anything. They don't ever let anger out. And they look at that as, I'm in control of my emotion. What that does is it just pressurizes the can and poof, you know, it usually blows out at the side. I use a water bottle illustration in my sessions. I think I've used it before on the podcast of like when you have a lot of unprocessed emotion and suppressed emotion, it just builds and builds and builds and builds, and it takes very little before you are spilling over, right? I mean, there's hardly any room left at the top of the bottle because you have not processed through the rest of your emotions. And so when we talk about controlling the emotions, a big part of that is knowing what to do with them and not just getting rid of them, which is how most men operate, I think, in terms of looking at emotion kind of as the enemy or as a bad thing, and once again, from the Stoic philosophy, as a hindrance to the good life, basically. And I wholeheartedly reject that.
Two things. One, I was going to say a lot of men's lives have been ruined due to not being able to control your emotions.
Right.
Obviously, anger, for sure. The question I was going to ask you, Joe, lust, that's not an emotion, right? What would you categorize lust as?
Oh, man. Yeah, passion. That's a good question.
That's came to mind as I was thinking about all the different.
Yeah, I don't view it as an emotion, but
yeah, it's not
kind of. Yeah,
it's kind of hard to characterize. But either way, a lot of people's lives have been ruined due to just inability to control your emotion. And to me, Joe, it's one of those things. And again, I will be deferring to you this whole episode as the therapist and the expert on this subject. From what I've seen in my experience, let's say you start out at a younger age and you pretty consistently just don't have any control of your emotions. As time goes on, it's going to be a lot harder for you to learn how to control your emotions. Right. If you go time and time and year after year and month after month of just not controlling it to all of a sudden control it. So by that, I mean, when you see a 21-year-old who just has no, you know, flies off the handle and just punches walls or, you know, stuff like that, odds are that is a young person who at age 13 did not really know how to control their emotions and just continually, you know, allowed their emotions to get out of hand, essentially. And so I guess my plea then to godly young men would be, hey, if that's you now, stop right now, because it's going to take time for you to, honestly, to me, again, practice. You have to practice controlling. You have to practice not saying what immediately comes to your mind just out of anger, right? You have to practice not just flying into a rage. You have to practice all these things. And if you've been practicing for 15 years the opposite of, I'm just going to say whatever comes to my head, I'm going to cuss at this person, I'm going to whatever, you've got to turn that ship around pretty quick.
Yeah, no doubt. My what comes to mind is, I was reading this recently of, I think his name is Gavin McKenna. I know last name is McKenna. I think it's Gavin. He's like the number one prospect in the world right now for hockey. He's projected to go number one. He's in some big trouble. He just got assault charges thrown at him because apparently he punched a guy and broke his jaw, like in a bar fight or something. And so there's assault charges. Might permanently ruin his career. It's kind of,
there's so many athletes that have that story.
Yeah, exactly. It's to be determined on what happens. But again, a fit of rage comes over him, and I don't know the full story. I don't know how much who knows what. On the other hand, how often, as you said, how many athletes and how many, you know, just well-known, those are the stories we know. How many other millions of stories are around the world, around America, of guys just doing this that ruin their lives, you know, the road rage incidents or whatever it may be. And so, again, it's really important for us to understand this concept of how to control it. And what I would say is there's a, I'm going to get a little therapist-y here, therapize everybody for a second. The idea that I use a lot of times for emotion is called internal family systems. It's parts work. So anybody that's familiar with therapy may be familiar with Dr. Richard Schwartz, and there's a lot of people that do it, but he was the one that came up with internal family systems. The idea is that we are made up of multiple parts. Now, I'm not going to get into the Christian side of things or anything like that. I think it's valid to say we have an angry part. We have a sad part. We have an anxious part.
Reminds me of Inside Out.
Yeah, exactly.
The Pixar movie.
Correct. Yeah. Inside Out was built on IFS.
Okay.
And so, yeah, they used a lot of those.
You loved that movie, didn't you?
I love that movie because it's so, like we were told, actually, make sure your clients watch this when I was at an agency. Make sure your clients watch this when it came out because this is going to be perfect to work with kids. And it was. I mean, it really helped kids be able to conceptualize. The point is, it doesn't have to run the show. Like in the movie, anger doesn't run the show, but it is a part of, I think Riley is the little girl. It is a part of who she is. And so when we can understand it's just a part, it has something to say. We need to give it a space to say what it needs to say. Our job is to understand what every emotion, what every part is trying to tell us. And it's not just, that's where lust comes in. You know, I think there's an addict part or there's a lustful part or things like that. So there's multiple parts. There's sometimes a victim part or there's a overachieving part or something along those lines. So there's a bunch. I'm not going to go into the depths of IFS. It's very fascinating. But when we're talking about controlling emotion, it's important to get that right, to understand we are merely talking about a part and trying to understand specifically something like anger. What does angry Joe need in this situation? Why is he coming out and trying to destroy the world, really? You know, why is he so upset? When we have a better understanding of angry Joe or, you know, your angry part, it really helps us get a hold on what do we need in this moment? Because so often we'll do things impulsively and it's like anger is attempting to seek justice or it's attempting to find control. It's attempting to, you know, it's attempting to actually keep us safe from other people. We get angry and a wall goes up. It's attempting to be known. We say something really mean and we're, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Yeah, but that's a thought that's internal that's trying to get out and anger's trying to express that. So the book, I have it on my shelf, it's called No Bad Parts. And the idea is that, yes, we know we're, as Christians, we know there's nobody good, no, not one, right? On the other hand, the idea is that the parts are attempting to help us. They don't always do a great job, but they're attempting to help us in some way. So your anger is attempting to help you. Your anxiety is attempting to help you. But how? Anxiety is trying to keep you safe. It's trying to get you prepared for what's coming, right? Those types of concepts. And so anyway, does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. I mean, I just, to take it out of the therapy world for a second, because I don't want to try to put myself there. Again, Joe does a great job with that. I just had this conversation with my son the other day about, hey, it's okay to be angry. I know we just talked about this in the discipline episode a couple weeks ago, but it's okay to be angry. It's not wrong to be angry. Jesus in the temple, safe to say he was pretty angry. But what did he do with it? Did he start hitting people and cussing at people and throwing? No. He did something that was perfectly within his right to do in his father's temple. But again, he didn't start hitting people or anything like that. And so then you have, again, talking to a young kid, like, hey, it's okay to be angry. You can't hit your sister because you're angry. You know, you can't stomp away or whatever because you're angry. And for, you know, you think of adult behaviors, like you can't punch a wall. You can't obviously hit anybody else. You can't, you know, scream at people. Like, there's just certain things you can't do out of anger. But the anger itself is not what is wrong. Again, Ephesians 4:26 is what comes to mind. It's be angry and do not sin. Well, what does that imply? It implies that you can be angry and not sin. And so anger itself is not the sin. So from a biblical perspective, that's important.
But what does it say right after that? Don't let the sun go down on your anger, wrath, right? Yep. Which means process it. Work through it. Figure it out,
essentially.
Right. It's trying to do something. Get it out, you know, in an appropriate way. Punching somebody isn't helpful. That's not going to get the anger out. Because a lot of times the guys that do that, they're just as angry after, you know. And now the anger, it's interesting, the self-sabotaging element to something like anger. We lash out. I call you a name. I get mad at you. I punch you, whatever it may be. And now I'm angry at myself. And so it's like I was attempting to externalize the anger and I end up internalizing it because I'm upset at myself. Like I ruined my life. And so instead of actually keeping the anger external, if that really angered me, now I get to be mad at myself.
So it's the worst of both worlds is what it seems
like. Yeah. Correct. We end up acting out and it hurts us all the more. And so, as you said, anger is not the enemy. It's not wrong, but it's also not our greatest ally either. And I think a lot of guys can use this where they think it's, you know, they let anger drive a lot of what they do. And it makes me push hard at the gym and it makes me, you know, whatever, go out and conquer things. And so they channel the anger. Okay, there's a part of that, but what I find is that you just burn up internally a lot of the time. You burn out if you're always being driven by anger. Sometimes that can be a very motivating factor in your life. We can also really get out of hand. And guys that are always trying to control the anger, it's always right underneath the surface. That's not healthy. That's really not healthy. It'd be like a guy who's always ready to cry. You know, he's got so many tears, so much sadness underneath the surface. It's like, man, he's always kind of weepy. And everybody looks at him and is like, what's going on here, man? It's the same thing with anger. Why would it always be underneath the surface?
So let me ask you this, Joe. What would you advise? Let's say somebody's watching or listening to this right now and they think, I have a bit of an anger problem. Because I do think there's an element of like, even if you're not punching walls and stuff, if you're getting angry at things too often, that's a problem. Like every little thing should not set you off. And it goes to your point about suppressing like
the water bottle.
Right. But let's say somebody's listening to this and thinks, you know what, I have an anger problem. Maybe I lash out. Maybe I do things I shouldn't. What are some starting tomorrow type steps that they can take in their life? Some practices, practical things that will help them. What would you say?
Anger that sticks around is almost always driven by hurt or fear. Sometimes injustice, things along those lines, but almost always driven by hurt or fear. So if you have one of those and you realize, like, man, my water bottle is really full. I'm carrying around a ton of anger. Almost always that will go back to a time where you were hurt or a time where you were scared. Anger is a powerful emotion. It's an empowering emotion. Feeling fear is not powerful. Feeling fear is very scary. Feeling sadness, feeling hurt is very scary because I'm vulnerable in that moment. I'm letting you know what hurt me. But it's also what drives anger. So anger is kind of that buffer surface level emotion. I almost think of it like, think of it as cold brew, as weird as this is. I don't know why,
okay,
but I just think it's okay. Cold brew.
I can work with this.
You got the foam on top. I was going to say Mr. Cold Brew. Will is a big fan. You got the foam on top, right? And so that's the part that everybody's going to, you know, everybody kind of wants. And underneath it is really kind of the bitter part. That's the way I look at anger is like anger is that cream at the top. And I know it's not a good thing, but it's like that cream at the top hits that buffer before you get to what's really underneath it. And so anger rises to the surface. Everybody sees the anger. What's underneath it, though, again, is almost always hurt or fear. And if you can process through that and say, you know, I started being a really angry person when I was 13. Okay, what's going on at 13? What happened at 13 that caused you to start thinking through the lens of anger all the time? I guarantee you something will have started. If you're angry all the time, something will have started the purpose of the anger. You didn't come out of the womb an angry kid.
Right.
Somewhere along the way, you grew angry. Maybe that's due to trauma. Maybe that's due to bullying. Maybe that's due to whatever it may be. It's those vulnerable emotions, though, that help you get the anger out. So the first thing, there's other things we'll get to, but the first thing I'd say is understanding what is driving the anger underneath it as much as you can. So does that, hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. Any other tips to throw out there?
Yeah, I'm looking at the outline. There's a lot of different tips in terms of like just practical. Yes, channeling into something, working out, you know, something physical.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, you know, guys will go, you know, punching bag essentially.
Right, right. I don't think that's always bad. I think if you're having to do that consistently.
Daily, yeah.
Right, daily to just get it all out, or people that, again, they want to use that anger to drive them, you know, all the time, that's not healthy. On the other hand, man, if you get angry and you can just go for a run or go hit a punching bag or, you know, go to the gym and kind of work a lot of that off, I do think that that can be a healthy thing. That doesn't mean that the emotions process through, though. There's a difference between coping and processing, and I think I've explained this before, but coping's the Band-Aid before you get to the surgery. Like, you do have to stop the bleeding, but it's not intended to actually fix what's underneath.
Sure.
So if your wife calls you a name or tells you something mean and you find yourself flying off the handle, a lot of times, like, well, you caused this. No, she hit it in an insecurity. Yeah. And now you're really hurt, but you don't want to tell her that you're hurt, so you got angry. And hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
So you said something back, you screamed at her, or you got mad, or whatever it may be, and you go, oh, man, there goes my anger. You were hurt. And if you would call that out in the moment and just said, man, that really hurt, what you said, you show that vulnerability, you let her retract it. Sometimes they double down on it. We still show that vulnerability of, like, that hurt. The yelling back at her doesn't accomplish anything. Because now, again, hurt people hurt people. Now she's hurt, and now we feel like the bad guy, when in reality, it started with her saying something that really hurt. Then we got to figure out the insecurity. Why does that hurt so much?
Yeah.
And once you understand your insecurities, why did this hurt me? Why am I afraid of this? You ask yourself those questions, you'll get down to the bottom of it. So channeling it sometimes can be helpful as a coping technique, getting the emotion appropriately, which would be, I've done this before. You know, you get in your car and you just scream in the car, you know, scream it out. I've had a few moments, even last year, a few moments where that happened. You know, I got in the car and just needed to let it out. Calling a friend and venting. I mean, you've been here for me when I've been frustrated, and my brother as well. And it's just like, let me just vent for a second. My wife is great at that too. Advocating for yourself with the person that angered you and saying, whoa, I don't appreciate that. That's not okay. You don't have to scream at them, but you can let them know that really ticks me off. And here's why. As long as you know your why and you're not looking to suppress the emotion, yeah. I think it's a lot easier to work through.
Brief thought I have on this is, you know, my interactions are limited to friends, family, and work, essentially. I guess that's most people's, I should say. But, like, my point is, like, you know, there's been times I've been angry within my marriage or times that I've been angry at work. And I'll just share a couple of things that I try to do mentally. The first thing that I do when I can feel myself getting to the point is I actually mentally analyze my voice volume. Mm. Am I yelling at this point? Because obviously kind of the gut not thinking reaction is just to raise your voice and yell. Is there a time where that is maybe needed? Sure. I mean, we're not going to litigate that right now. My point is, that is something that I try to do is, like, am I? Because the problem with yelling and screaming is you can be 100% correct. Nobody's listening at that point.
Right.
When the voices get raised, you start yelling, nobody's listening. Everybody gets defensive. It just doesn't work. So that's the first thing I do because, again, if I'm trying to get a point across or share, hey, you know, this is a problem or whatever it is, I want to appear rational. And so then that's the second thing that I also try to do is I actually try to slow down and reason through actually saying it out loud why I'm upset.
Yep.
With my wife, for instance, just as an example, and we don't fight hardly ever. But when we do argue and I find myself really mad and frustrated, I do not shut up and go to a corner. I do not say, give me 3 hours, let me go drive. I share in a non-elevated voice, this is why I'm frustrated and XYZ. Like, I over-communicate, essentially. Yeah. And again, this can apply at work. Like, this can apply with a friend, as Joe's speaking about. Like, I find when I talk it out, it helps me process through it. And it helps me kind of honestly take a deep breath in a way while also sharing, this is why I'm really angry, and I hope you can see that. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a great point. Like, the more you talk, we talk a lot about communication, the more you talk, the easier it is to process through these things, especially with a spouse. My wife and I talk all the time. And so, yeah, there's been some things she said in the past where it's like, wow, that really hurt. But because we're used to talking, I'm not trying to break the relationship because I, you know, I'm not trying to hurt her back either. It's like, that really hurt.
And you also don't get offended at every little thing.
Right.
And so it means something when it's like, hold on now. I didn't, you know, that made me upset.
Correct. Because I understand like where she's coming from most of the time. Like, she's not attempting to hurt me. And if I do feel she's attempting to hurt me, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Right. If I think that that's the
malicious
case,
or something.
If it's malicious or she's just trying to get back at me or something that I, you know, for something I did, I don't know. That doesn't happen very often if it does. But yeah, I mean, it's, you give the benefit of the doubt because the same thing, like if you were to tell me something, you're a good guy and we always get along. Therefore, the benefit of the doubt is going to be on Will, where I don't think, I'd like to think I would not get that upset because I know he's not trying to hurt me. Even if you were trying to tell me something,
it's the bank
and
account.
It did hurt. Correct. It's the bank account.
Yep.
But if I'm consistently getting angry, man, own the emotion, own that I'm just angry. And sometimes it's kind of first step, like in 12 step, admitting you have a problem. Sometimes you just need to admit, I'm just angry. What's driving the anger? Go back to the beginning, figure that out, process through them. And by processing, I know it's a therapy term and it's kind of difficult to get to, but processing is really just, you can journal about it, you can write about it, you can talk to others about it. I talked to my wife about, man, this hurt me, or this is connected to XYZ. Like, we had something recently and she said something and it was like, why does that hurt so much? And it went back to something from childhood and it was like,
oh wow,
man, yeah, I had to sit in that for a second to figure out why did that hurt of what she said. But it really helped. And then I processed through it with her and I told her, like, man, I think this connected to this. We worked through it and we came through just fine. So sometimes you just got to sit in it.
I got a lot of questions I want to ask you about sadness. And so I don't know if you had anything else you wanted to kind of wrap up with on anger.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the prevailing one, I would imagine, that guys are going to struggle with.
Yeah, exactly.
Sadness, Joe. So it's very interesting. You've got on here, nobody likes a wallower. I find myself very frustrated with people who are perpetually sad. I know that's different than being depressed. We should probably have a depression episode at some point. I've lived a very blessed life so far, but I also like to think of myself as a kind of a perpetual optimist. I try to be, you know, smiling and joyful every single day. Personally, transparency. This has not been the most fun week for me work wise. I've had a ton of stuff to do. My voice, you can tell, like I'm kind of sick, and so in face of that, I try to be very happy and joyful, right? And then you have people who it seems like they are looking for opportunities to be sad. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like every little thing. And so my question to you would be, what does that stem from? The person who kind of, instead of looking for the reason to be joyful, is looking for the reason to be sad. And how does that differentiate itself from somebody who's a wallower, who just, poor pitiful me, I'm a victim, man, this world is out to get me. Like, I know that's not what you're talking about when you talk about somebody who's sad. But obviously, I think maybe sometimes we can conflate those two. So just thoughts on all of that.
Yeah, be careful asking me therapy questions, man.
We'll That's right.
So there's a couple different things. Yes, I think there's a big difference between wallowing and just being sad. I'll hit the wallower, I'll hit the perpetually sad, and then I'll hit just the regular sad. So the wallower, we actually have a term for this in IFS. We call it King Baby. I call it King Baby. And that came from place I was working at, and it's a passive pessimist. Oh, nobody likes me and everybody's out to get
nobody wants to be my friend.
Nobody wants to be my friend. And then people rush in and go, no, you know, and they kind of pick it. It's like, bingo, you know, that's
got what they wanted.
Internally, yeah. I don't know that that's a conscious thought, but subconsciously, that's kind of what they're doing, is they're hedging their bet a little bit. Cause if nobody does show up, it's like, I knew it. And if somebody does show up, then it's like, okay, it keeps me from being fully hurt and rejected. It kind of hedges a little bit. The same thing with the sadness, the one who's perpetually sad, I think is trying to get people to validate and take their emotions seriously. They want somebody to just say, it's okay to be sad, to give them permission to be sad, and then to say, what's actually going on? When you process through it, I've worked with people that are always sad. When you process through it, it's like, man, there is a lot of reason to be sad. And sometimes doing the Job friend thing of like, man, they sat with him for a week. Now, they didn't, what they did after wasn't great, but for a week, they sat in silence with the guy. You know, yeah. It's like, just let him be sad. Sometimes that person needs that, but the constant sad... The other thing is, it hurts. I think you're protecting yourself from hurt, because it really hurts to get your hopes up and have them dashed.
Sure.
So if you're sad all the time, you don't have to get your hopes up about anything. It's like, oh man, it's not. It's different from the wallower of everything's always, you know, nobody likes me. But there is a sadness of like, what's there to be happy about type of thing. Because when you're happy, it assumes things are good. Most of the time, there's a catalyst for what put them into sadness that they have not yet processed.
Sure, that makes sense.
But the constant sadness is like, yeah, they're just looking for somebody to understand and take that seriously. For the regular sadness, though, yeah, I mean, I look at it as, once again, it's a part, and it's okay to listen to sadness. We talked about it.
Wasn't that the whole point of the Inside Out movie, is that
yeah.
you sadness has to be a part of your
correct emotions. Like happiness or joy wanted to kick sadness out. Like, we don't need you. What good do? You don't make anything fun. And when you realize, once you remove sadness, what is good without bad? You know, it's yin and yang type of thing. And sadness is what helped. Like, even in the movie, it's such a brilliant movie. Even in the movie where she falls and hurts herself, I think, on the ice rink or whatever. And the joy came from her parents picking her up. And so without the sadness of her falling, she never got the joy of the parents being there for her.
Yeah,
and so the depression kind of sets in because she didn't allow herself to feel those things. It's a brilliant movie. You haven't seen Inside Out, go watch it. It's a good one. Or watch it over again.
One of Pixar's last best, in my opinion.
Yeah, man, truly. I don't know that there's a good one after that. But a big part of crying, when we talk about processing through it, is just crying.
Yeah.
Crying is not it's a part of the process. What's interesting is, we talk about, you know, men don't cry. And we had that episode again, 123, on grown men can cry, and that's okay. Everybody has their own litmus test, or their own understanding on, like, what constitutes worth of crying. Yeah. And so if your wife dies, tragically, God forbid, right, if something like that, like, okay, you can cry about that one, okay? If your child, of course you can cry about that. A parent, yeah, I think you cry about that. What about, you know, if you lose your job? Or what about, you know, something like, oh, I can't cry about that. Or what about if, you know, something that you really, really wanted was taken from you? You know what I mean? Like, then they start to worry about what they can cry about. Crying is a natural thing that God put inside. You don't want to be the guy who's always crying. But there are absolutely times where letting the sadness out is the best thing. There are also times tears don't always flow. And that's fine. It's still okay to sit in sadness for a second and say, what's sadness trying to tell me? I mean, it's just trying to tell me that things stink. I'm not happy with where things are right now. Okay, well, I'll listen to that. I'll journal about it. I'll talk through it. I'll give myself some time to process and not rush the process. We have like a hatred of sadness. Again, going back to the movie, we just got to get out of sadness as fast as possible. Why? Well, I just don't want to feel sad. Why? Well, it just doesn't feel good. Okay, there's a lot of emotions that don't feel good. It's a necessary part of the process. And if we embrace sadness as just a part of life, I think we do a lot better.
I think the only thing I would say is, this is where, like, if you don't have somebody that you're really close to, close friend, a parent, obviously if you're married, your spouse, this one can be a lot more difficult. Could you say talk it through? I mean, obviously, as first person I talk it through is my wife. Outside of that, obviously you. I've got some guys at work I'm close to. I'd talk it out with my parents. Like, I got a lot of options. I understand that not everybody has, especially if you're unmarried, maybe don't have any siblings, like... So I guess I say that to say, I would encourage you, if you're looking around going, well, I don't really have anybody that I would feel comfortable talking it out or crying it out with or to, start looking, essentially. Yep. Try find somebody to invest in, again, friend at church, maybe a sibling that you don't get along great with or something. Maybe it's a parent.
Join the Discord, you know, it's not ideal, but
exactly. Like, I would imagine, I can't speak from experience, but I would imagine this one's a lot harder if you're looking around like, I got nobody to talk it out with. So that's the thought I have on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't mean the Discord's not ideal. Join it. It's fantastic. It's not
that
ideal.
That's an outlet.
The only outlet you have, as to Will's point, try to find as many outlets as possible. It's just about getting it out. Sometimes the commiserating pulls us out of sadness faster than anything. Is somebody to just validate it and go, man, that does stink. I'm really sorry. Like, you know it does. And then you pull your way through it.
All right, so, Joe, 2 minutes on anxiety. And
I was going to say, we don't need to do too much on this. Anxiety really is rooted in a lack of control. What do you not have control over in your life? If I knew that I was going to get 100 on the, if I knew every answer on the test, I wouldn't be worried about the test, right? I wouldn't have any anxiety. Anxiety is about what we can't control. It's about the unknown, things like that. And so make a list of the things you can control. Try to give the rest over to God. Once again, talk it through with people. Understand where the anxiety may be trying to help you. Sometimes anxiety is trying to prepare you for something. Really anxious about an upcoming thing, like, talk to that part internally. I see it. I get it. I'm prepared. Do everything you can to prepare for that. Like, the anxiety is going to be a lot worse if you don't study for the test. So study for the test and let that kind of just talk to that internal part. Yes, that's a logical thing, talking to an emotion, but still, let it talk to that internal part of, like, it's okay. You know, I have done everything I can to control what I can control. I've got to leave the rest over to God and recognize that, I mean, you can only do so much. So, I mean, that's a very brief thing on anxiety, but more than anything, we wanted to really discuss anger and kind of get into that. And thanks for letting me just...
Oh, for sure. I would say I should have put this in with the sadness point. Practice gratitude. Gratitude.
Yep.
Every single day, identify something specific, maybe multiple things, that you are just grateful for. To me, that always helps turning the pessimism to optimism, the sadness into joy. You know, the glass half empty to glass half full is specifically from the perspective of a Christian... We have a lot to be grateful for. Every morning I start my day, I read my Bible reading, and then I will write down a Bible verse from the reading that I kind of just want to stick with me, maybe save it for devotional later or something. And then I will write down for my prayer before I pray something that is on my heart from like a request standpoint, somebody, surgery or something going on, and then something I'm grateful for. And it really has forced me, because obviously you can't use my wife and kids every single day, right? Like, you got to be creative, but forces you to look for those things that, oh man, God has blessed me with this. I've got this coming up. I'm really grateful for that. Or this happened yesterday. I was really grateful for that. Can be really small, but to me, focusing on gratitude, again, sorry to go back to the sadness thing, can really help with that aspect.
It's a great point. Great point. Gratitude always helps. And for every one of these, I think if we are grateful people that are focusing on the positives of life as much as possible, doesn't mean negatives don't happen, but I think it's a great perspective to have. And starting every day off the way Will's talking about, starting every day off with God, with a prayer over to God, give him the things that are on your heart and mind, and just let him have those things. Man, that is... Grounding is such a big deal in emotions. We didn't even get into grounding techniques with the body and where you feel it in the body. Just allowing for the grounding techniques to take place. You can Google those if you want. Getting up in the morning, having a set morning routine where you start with God, your day will go better. Guaranteed. It doesn't mean it's going to go perfect. Bad things may happen. Your response to things will be 10 times better because you started with gratefulness. You started connecting with God. You started at an early time where you were up maybe before everybody else, and it's just calm. It's peaceful. You may be going through some really tough times, but I'm telling you what, that can be life-changing. So, yeah, we didn't get into stress. We didn't get into grief. We didn't get into depression. Didn't get into the other stuff.
Save it for another day.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's another episode for another day. These are kind of the main ones we just wanted to discuss on controlling emotions. And the only thing I'd say is treat them as a part. The part's just trying to tell you something. Don't suppress it. Talk about it. Think about it. Process through it. Journal about it. And just understand the why. And I guarantee you that will help quite a bit in terms of overcoming long-term anger. And hopefully we gave you a few tips in the meantime as to what to do. Get yourself some separation. You know, go for a run. Do whatever it may be. And at the end of the day, yeah, emotions are a really good thing. So let's use them as God would intend for us to use them, but also be grateful for them. Another thing to be grateful for that we get to experience. So anything else?
I don't think so. This has been episode 160 of the Godly Young Men podcast. We thank you so much for watching and or listening. We'll be back next week.